It is 8:30, and you are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP and 90.3 FM Seattle. And we are joined this morning by Maria Tomczyk. Maria
Good morning. Tomczyk,
co-editor of Eat the State. Maria, where's what'd you do with Jav?
Just because he's not here doesn't mean I did something with him. Well, no, Jav has had some flu symptoms this week, and as anybody knows who knows someone who has had organ transplants and has to live with a suppressed immune system, that can be kind of serious. So he went into his doctor yesterday, and they decided to keep him overnight for observation and to put some fluids in his body, and that means he can't be here this morning. But he is pretty much okay. He just needs a little rest and a little time to recuperate. So I'm here instead.
Very good. Holding the fort down. So
yeah.
Yeah, and in the spirit of being with Job last night, I was putting fluids into my body, too. So, but that's not affecting me today, luckily. So let's jump into this. Tukwila put their foot down this week.
Yes, they did. The Tukwila City Council voted 5-2 to reject an agreement with Sound Transit to permit a light rail alignment along I-5 and State Route 518. What this will do is the Tukwila agreement was kind of key for Sound Transit to get the $500 million they need from the Federal Transit Authority to begin construction for the light rail project, which is running, what, 2, maybe 3 years behind now?
We've lost count. We don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, some people are a little puzzled by this, but I think most folks know why the city of Tukwila voted against the agreement. Is basically because the light rail line is going nowhere. I mean, originally the city of Tukwila wanted the light rail line to go down to South Center, which is their business district, and then curve over to SeaTac Airport. But as it turns out, with the new alignment that's proposed, the light rail line goes to neither of those two places. It really goes nowhere. It ends about a mile short of the airport. And the problem with that is its ability to go to the airport is conditional on whether or not the third runway will get built. But the third runway is in limbo and could be in limbo for a really, really long time. And it's very possible it never gets built. In which case, the light rail line will continue to go nowhere for a really, really, really long time if it ever gets built. And that's a question right now, whether or not light rail will ever get built. There's an upcoming vote on the King County Council and on the Seattle City Council for whether or not to turn the bus tunnel over to Sound Transit to run a combination of light rail and buses through the tunnel. And that's going to be kind of controversial, too. It may get more support, interestingly enough, it may get more support on the county council than it will on the city council. There are some folks on the city council who are questioning it, because in order to retrofit the tunnel for the light rail line, they'll have to close the tunnel, which will put all those buses up on the street again on 3rd Avenue. And the reason the tunnel was built in the first place was to get buses off of 3rd Avenue and to make the downtown core less congested. And that's going to be reversed by a decision that turns the bus tunnel over to Sound Transit. So it's a possibility that Sound Transit will run into problems with that as well. And at this point, there's the question of what should happen with Sound Transit's light rail portion. Should it be built at all? I saw some interesting statistics. Well, I saw an interesting study yesterday. It was actually a Como public opinion poll, which asked people what should happen next with Sound Transit's light rail line. And the responses were kind of interesting. Only about 8% wanted to reroute the light rail line. Only about 14% said build it anyway. About 6% said to start over. And a whopping 72% said to scrap it altogether. Now, that's nearly 3/4 of the respondents are against light rail. And that's because it's going through a portion of town that fought to have light rail put underground, and it's not going to be put underground through that portion of town. So it's going through and serving a neighborhood that really didn't want it on its streets in the first place. And it's not really going anywhere. It's not going to South Center. It's not going to the airport. It's not ending even at a place that's a major employment center. So the question is, if it's not serving anybody, why build it? And I think that's a very valid question.
Yeah, the tracks lead out of town, but they don't go anywhere.
I know. What was the deal with that? What is the point of that? I don't know. Also this week, the head of Sound Transit's commuter rail has resigned. If people remember, the commuter rail is the heavy rail line from Tacoma to Seattle and back. Now, I think when people think about whether or not light rail is a good deal or not, they look at the commuter rail and ask themselves, is that a good deal? Well, the commuter rail line is behind schedule as well. There are only two trains a day that run between Seattle and Tacoma. We were promised that there would be more and that they would be started much sooner than they have been. So they're obviously behind schedule. It has turned out to be 32% more expensive than we were originally told it would be. And there have been many, many problems with getting the right-of-way permits, with negotiating, I believe it's with Burlington Northern, to get access to rail lines. And there have also been some tie-ups with the environmental impact on shorelines of running numerous trains a day at high speeds between Seattle and Everett, which has kept the line from expanding past just the Seattle-Tacoma routes. And there have been complaints by people who live along the tracks saying that the trains are too fast, they're too noisy, et cetera, et cetera. So I think people are looking at that and saying, you know, if the heavy rail, the commuter rail, is turning out to be way more expensive than we thought and not serving enough people, then why would we want light rail if it's going to turn out to be the same?
Now, with the commuter rail, though, wasn't that pretty much using pre-existing lines, or did they?
It is mostly using pre-existing lines, but some of those tracks have to be upgraded for the newer trains, and you know the newer trains are double-decker trains. They in some places they might need a more stable track or a different kind of track, or the track might be worn, or they might need a different route. They may not be able to take a sharp a curve, you know, going at the speeds that they go. So portions of the track might need to be replaced in some places. Mm-hmm. So those are all things that have to be taken into account. And when you look at trains going along the shoreline, you have issues of shoreline and soil erosion. When you have a number of trains passing over a portion of the shoreline per day and under various weather conditions.
Sure. But it still seems like if they could resolve those reasonably, that the commuter line still seems like a viable idea.
It is, but you know, they thought that they'd be able to resolve those in 2 or 3 years, and they're still dragging on. So there are questions about, will they be able to resolve them in another 2 or 3 years or 6 years or 7 years? Mm-hmm. So we're not at all sure that that will happen. And it's discouraging when you see the head of the commuter rail resign and say, I wasn't. And the reason he resigned was because he's an operations manager. He knows how to operate rail once it's in place. He doesn't know how to negotiate that kind of stuff, environmental permits and right-of-ways and that sort of thing. And he's throwing up his hands and throwing in the towel and saying, I can't do it.
Okay. All right. So, well, that's a good thing then. Get somebody in there that does know what they're doing. Or, you know, I mean,
unfortunately, he was a good pick for the job. He was a man who had, I think, 28 years experience with Amtrak, so he should have been a perfect fit. But what he's saying is there's so many problems with trying to get the rail going that he simply can't do it. And I don't think they're going to be able to find someone who has more experience or is a better fit, unfortunately. Now, if we contrast the problems with light rail with the monorail, because this week the monorail had a notable success, we find that there's a very different situation with the monorail. This week, the monorail folks, the Elevated Transportation Company, got an agreement with the Seattle City Council and Mayor Greg Nichols to use the West Seattle Bridge as a right-of-way, to be able to fit the monorail on the West Seattle Bridge. And that's going to save about $200 million for the monorail project. That's a big sum of money, and it's very encouraging because it will bring the costs down on the construction for the monorail. And that's not the only thing that's part of the agreement. The city said that they will help retrofit the bridge, so that will also cut down on some of the costs for the monorail. The city is going to expedite permits and the permitting process. You put that in contrast with Sound Transit Light Rail. Without having an agreement with the city of Tukwila, they will have to tackle each permit one by one, because Tukwila is not going to help Sound Transit negotiate permits. They're not going to expedite the permit process. This is a stark contrast to that. The city of Seattle will help Monorail do that. And the city also will give a $20 million startup loan to the Monorail in order to begin construction months early. Now, you can also contrast that with light rail, which is running way behind in construction. We were promised that portions of the light rail system would be operating by 2004, but that was a delayed date as well. So, and now it's looking like the light rail line won't be operating until 2006 or beyond. So this is very encouraging with the Monorail to see that they're even talking about starting construction 3 or 4 months early. So I think the main difference, really the main difference between the light rail and the Monorail has to do with the fact that the light rail line is a regional line and has to have the agreement of all the various local authorities, the City of Seattle, King County, the City of Tukwila, maybe the City of SeaTac, etc., whereas the Monorail only has to deal with the City of Seattle. It's an in-city transit system. Another main difference between the two is the Monorail actually goes somewhere. It goes along heavily traveled routes, and so people can look at the route and say, it's going to serve me. It goes to my neighborhood. You know, it's going to make it a lot easier for me to get to work. And then a third thing is that there's a psychological difference between thinking about riding the light rail line through a tunnel, a very, very deep tunnel, when it comes to talking about a northern segment of the light rail line, and riding the Monorail with a view over the city of Seattle. I think people would much rather see where they're going and much rather have a view of the city as they're riding into work or riding home again than they would be sitting down in a very, very, very deep tunnel under the U District and under the Ship Canal. I think when I think about that as a transit rider, one of the first things I think of is, what about an earthquake? Now, I know that on a Monorail, you might also be vulnerable to an earthquake, but many of us have been up in tall buildings during earthquakes and have not seen the buildings fall. You know, I mean, we also know that after earthquakes, some of our bridges sustain damage, but don't fall, you know. But when you're in a tunnel, you're thinking about all of the tons of dirt above you, the water, the buildings, etc., and it just doesn't make you comfortable. You know, particularly when you look at the downtown bus tunnel, which leaks right now, and it doesn't have the Ship Canal over it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at a very, very, very deep tunnel going to depths that are very uncommon for transit construction, and we just don't know how safe that would be. I mean, we can assume that it's going to be safe, but we just don't know for sure. You know,
well, as long as they make it so that the rail line would be airtight, then if that water comes rushing in, then it'd kind of be like being at the aquarium. So
I don't think I put some
fins on those suckers and they'll be fine. So I think you're being very negative here. So how does this all equate with the numerous transit plans that they are potentially having? Well, they're going to have on mm-hmm. the fall ballot.
Yeah, we know for sure that we're going to have a statewide referendum 51, the statewide plan, $7.7 billion in road construction over 10 years, funded by a 9-cent gas tax increase, higher trucking fees, and a 1% tax on car sales. That's going to be on the ballot. The regional transportation plan is supposed to be on the ballot, but I think it may not make it, and there's a problem with that. The city, actually the region-wide transportation plan, excuse me, is being put together by the Pierce County Council, the King County Council, and the Snohomish County Council, because it's supposed to fund projects in those three counties. Now, the statewide plan contains money for projects that are largely outside of that three-county area. Okay. Now, that $7.7 billion that we will be voting on is largely for projects. It'll fund some projects in the three-county area, but it won't give them the funding that they need to complete those projects. That's supposed to come from the region-wide, the three-county area referendum. But the problem is when you've got three counties sitting down trying to figure out how much money to ask voters for, what projects to put it towards, and how to fund it, you're going to have disagreements. There's going to be questions about, oh, King County's taken too big a share of the pie. You know, oh, no, we shouldn't be funding the Alaskan Way Viaduct. We should be funding, you know, SR this or that, or expanding I-405 or whatever. So there's going to be questions with that. And the most controversial thing that the three counties are dealing with is how much to fund transit versus how much to fund roads, because there are folks, particularly on the King County Council, who see the region-wide transportation plan as the ability to get a bunch more bucks for Sound Transit's light rail line. Now, it's a bad place to try to get money for Sound Transit's light rail line, because the light rail line will never serve people in Pierce County. It will never serve people in Snohomish County. And if Dwight Pelz, in particular, and other folks on the King County Council really push it and try to get money for the light rail line, they may actually end up delaying the referendum so long that it won't get on the November ballot. They only have a week, just 1 week, to figure out what projects should be part of the referendum. They only have a week to drop the referendum itself to figure out what kind of tax increases they're going to use to try to fund it, et cetera, how big the package is supposed to be. And that's not very long when you're talking about three different government bodies to try to draw up something like that. And if they start dragging in transit, it's going to really be hard, and they're not going to make the deadline. Well, there's a problem. If we have the statewide plan on the ballot, but we don't have the region-wide plan on the ballot, there's a real problem in that the statewide plan might not pass. You know, I mean, this big $7.7 billion project that was hammered out finally by the state legislature. It took them how many years, 3 or 4 years, to finally address the problem and get a plan going, may not pass. And the reason for that is a March poll that was taken by Stuart Elway showed that there's a bare majority in the state that will vote at this point for referendum 51, a 52% majority versus 46 against. That's not a very big margin for error. You know, I mean, that's not a very big margin. I'm not comfortable with that. I think if it's going to pass, it's going to have a bigger base of support. But when you really look at those statistics, you find that 70% of all the yes votes are from the King, Pierce, and Snohomish County area. And if they realize that they're only going to be voting on a statewide plan that only provides initial funding for road construction and bridge replacement, et cetera, here in the Tri-County area, but that there's not a region-wide referendum, if there's not a referendum that addresses projects in the three-county area, then why vote for the statewide project? And it could go down in flames. Mm. That's a problem.
So it's kind of, in some ways, it's kind of the reverse of other referendums where the outlying counties, everything but the three primary counties in King County, Pierce, and Snohomish, where they're saying, well, you know, we're voting on something that just goes to those three counties, so we're not going to support that.
Which is not true. They're actually getting something out of this plan.
Well, in this case, they are. Uh-huh. But I'm saying in other cases, there's been other things, like, let's say, a stadium. You know, why would they, you know, cough up money for that?
Yeah, the reason why people in other counties don't support it is because they drive more. They're further away from where they need to get groceries or where their kids go to school, et cetera, or where they need to go to run their errands. They drive more, and the statewide plan is funded by a 9-cent gas tax increase. So it's why tax us more? We don't need more taxes, particularly in a year when people are having problems with their finances because of the recession. And then we're also forgetting that, particularly in a lot of rural parts of the state of Washington, there's very, very high unemployment. People can't afford to pay more in taxes.
All right. So anything else on that? Or
nope. Let's move on.
Let's talk a little bit about coverage this week on the racial profiling data collection.
Yes, indeed. The city council voted. It was another 5-2 vote to provide the money for putting cameras in police cars and for doing a racial profiling study of traffic stops by the Seattle Police Department. But the mayor's spokeswoman came right out and said, I don't think the mayor's going to support it. So here we have Greg Nichols going back on what the city council has voted for. He actually has to approve the plan. The city council can only set aside the money for it. And he has said, or his spokesperson has said that no, he wants to back out. And basically he wants to back out because the police guild doesn't want to do it. So, which is amazing. I mean, the city council has already gone back on a portion of the plan, which was to track tickets by each individual police officer because the police guild complained. I mean, that would have been sensible, would have been normal. The Washington State Patrol has been doing it for years, have been tracking traffic stops and tickets by individual officer and by the race of the person who was stopped. It's a basic job performance issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and that's what the racial profiling task force, which the city had put together, came mm-hmm. up with. That was their
exactly.
recommendation.
That was their recommendation,
which was made up of a significant number of police officers.
Exactly.
So,
but the police guild is going to go for what they can get, and in this case, they can boss around the mayor, and the mayor is letting them do it. And it's ridiculous, to say the least. Greg Nichols should get a backbone, okay? He should grow a backbone somehow. I mean, I know we've had him in office for how many months? What has he really done? He hasn't done much, as far as I can tell. And in this case, he's letting the SPD boss him around.
And shortly there, as soon as the report came out, the news coverage came out on that, then Seattle Police Department, Gil Kerlikowske and Ken Saucier both started saying, well, we can expect depolicing if you guys go through with this. Which,
I know. It's a ridiculous threat. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
So basically, we won't do our job if you actually mm-hmm. Carry through on this. So.
Yeah. I mean, get a backbone. Say, okay, you're not going to do your job. We'll fire you.
Yeah. That's what they okay. should be looking at. Any other, in any other situation, that would happen if the employees.
It would happen in my job. I mean, if I told my boss, I'm not going to do that, she would say, okay, you're out of here. You know? I mean, it's a job performance issue, okay? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything else to do with targeting specific officers. You know, it has to do with are these SPD officers doing their job? Okay, if the Washington State Patrol can do this, the Seattle Police Department can do this. There's no question.
All right. Well, we got about 5 minutes left, and mm-hmm. Still wanted to cover a couple of things at the national level. Saw this week where the NSA reports that it had a few intercepts prior to September 11th that it neglected to translate in time.
Yeah, the Joint Congressional Committee that's been investigating our so-called security agencies, our intelligence agencies post 9/11 and what they did prior to 9/11 and what kind of information they did or didn't have turned their attention on the National Security Agency, whose mandate, by the way, is to prevent terrorist attacks on U.S. soil by intercepting messages and basically listening in on just about all the communications they can. They intercepted a couple of messages on December 10th, one that said the big match is scheduled for tomorrow, another that said, oh, that the next day was 0 hour. And those messages were in Arabic, and they were not translated and analyzed until the day after September 11th. Now, I've been seeing in the newspapers and stuff a lot of excuses for that, like, oh, the NSA collects too much information, they can't analyze it all at once, and oh, the NSA didn't know who these people were, so they didn't know it was important enough to analyze that message right away. But I want to just read to you a quote from a New York Times article that was reprinted in the PI. And the quote is, quote, "The delay in translating and processing the communications was normal, given the priorities established within the agency at the time," officials said. "Top priority intercepts can be translated and analyzed immediately," intelligence officials said. And the quote goes on a little bit longer to excuse why they didn't translate it right away. But what it boils down to is they had their priorities wrong. Who set the priorities? What were the priorities? Where did they come from? Were they the same priorities that had the FBI wiretapping whorehouses in New Orleans while ignoring Al-Qaeda members training at flight schools in the U.S.? I mean, was that the case? Was that true? I would like to know. Of course, nobody is asking that, and that's the main question that needs to be asked about this.
Right. Who made the call on this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who made the call on this? What were their priorities at the time?
And unlike where some people have said where the CIA and or the other agencies had had serious financial or budgetary cutbacks over the years, NSA is well-funded and never gets cutbacks. I mean, I think they get the most money of all the intelligence agencies.
Yeah.
And so they weren't hurting.
No, for people or machinery or whatever. No, they weren't. And it's obvious they had the capability. It's just they didn't make it a priority.
Okay, also this week, I understand the White House was evacuated at
yes,
some point.
Yes, and this is kind of funny because the Secret Service started evacuating White House staffers when a small private plane came, I think it was within four miles of the White House. He was lost and off course, but didn't know it and didn't know he was that close to the White House. But the Secret Service started to evacuate the White House. They started getting staffers out of there, but nobody informed the Bushes. The Bushes were still in the White House, just kind of puttering around, and nobody said anything to them, which I think is interesting because I think it reflects the priorities of the Secret Service. I mean, they understand who runs the country, you know. They understand where the intelligence lies, you know. And it's not with the Bushes.
Mm.
So I just thought it would be fun to bring that up.
Yeah, you'd think the Bushes would have noticed when the whole place was empty.
You would think so, wouldn't you? You know, who knows? Maybe they thought everybody was taking a day off.
So, sort of related to that, I saw also this week where the Supreme Court ruled that they will no longer use the death penalty on the mentally retarded.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big...
That's very interesting, considering that there were two mentally retarded people, at least two, executed in Texas under George Bush's rule there. It's interesting that they have finally come out and said that. There are a number of states who have the death penalty, including Washington State, that have made it illegal to execute the mentally retarded. And it's long past time that the Supreme Court has ruled on this. And I'm just surprised that anyone on the Supreme Court voted against it. But it was the usual three, Clarence Thomas, Antonin Scalia, and William Rehnquist. It was the usual three rabidly right-wing jurists who did vote against it.
I thought it was a real boon for the current administration should the International Criminal Court ever actually kick in that they'll be covered now.
Yeah, that's true. George's butt is covered.
So, with that, we're pretty much out of time for this week. Talking this week with Maria Tomchik, who is co-editor at Eat the State. And Maria, tell us, what is Eat the State? Where do people find it?
Eat the State is a bi-weekly newspaper. You can find it in bookstores, coffee shops, bars, restaurants, all around town. You can also find it on the World Wide Web at www.eatthestate.org.
All right. So you and Jav will be back with us next week?
Yes, I think Jav will be in here. And if he's not, I'll be here.
Yeah, you'll be holding down the fort. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, then we will see you then.
Okay.